Betrayed, Ronald G. Sercombe. The Constellation, weary and a little wobbly after a 1,300-mile flight from New York with only a brief respite at Miami for fuel, fairly brushed the begonia-bowered peak of Blue Mountain, pushing through misty spirals nearly a mile and a half above the barren flatlands of Jamaica. Then it began a bumpy, ear-congesting descent to Palisados Airport.
"There it is," Arthur Anders said, nudging the right elbow of his slumbering wife, Linda. "There's Jamaica, land of glistening ferns and eternal sunshine. Yonder lies Kingston."
She opened her eyes briefly. They were a too bright blue, set in a disingenuous face, topped by a disheveled mop of tinted red hair. She yawned.
"I couldn't care less," she said. "I wanted Rio. I still want Rio."
Arthur Anders sighed.
"How many times must I explain? Rio would have meant identification papers, passports, reams of red tape. Probably a clattering teletype message or a phone call to Central Intelligence."
He spoke softly. The softness was appropriate because his eyes were soft brown, his face a soft tan, and even his hair a softening gray. Few would suspect he possessed Q clearance for atomic security. But this was quite in keeping with the policy of Central Intelligence to select apparent non-entities for top security jobs. The monstrous bird with the glistening wings nosed toward a landing strip. It bounced twice on macadam, and its tires shrieked as they left a puffy wake of acrid, smoldering rubber. Like a beaten eagle, the plane taxied to a rolling ramp, trembled, spluttered, and whined as its four propellers ceased beating the air. Parked near the aerodrome were half a dozen old taxicabs. Salt, sun, and dust had long since removed their gloss, with one exception. Dudley's 1942 Chevrolet looked almost as bright as the day it had left the factory. The reason was obvious. Even now, as sweat dripped from his forehead, Dudley applied wax and vigorously polished the glabrous hood of the old car. In the trunk, he had several cans of touch-up paint, bottles of heavy oil, cans of grease, and plastic containers of water. The Chevrolet, purchased from a tourist in 1947 for 200 hard-earned banana-picking pounds, or about 560 American dollars, was his pride and joy. As he rubbed, Dudley sang softly, rhythmically.
"Carry me aki gono Linstead Market. Not a quatty were to sell. Lord, what a night, not a bite. What a Saturday night."
He counted passengers as they stepped down the ramp. There were 47. More than half of them were obviously tourists, which made this a very good flight indeed for an off-season August day. The passengers looked uncomfortable as they emerged from an air-conditioned cabin into a 90-degree furnace, donning sunglasses and mopping foreheads. Dudley shaded his eyes with the palm of a hand. The noontime sun, reflecting on concrete paving, magnified the red texture of his dark skin. He was humbly proud of that color because it marked him as a true Jamaican, a descendant of Arawaks and a member of the proud but obsessively primitive Maroon tribe. Dudley, however, contrary to the mores of most of his friends and kin, had chosen to face civilization and its complex problems rather than retreat to the weird mountain fastness near Akampong. Now the passengers were claiming their baggage and most of the cab drivers, their eyes gleaming like freshly minted Yankee silver dollars, were eagerly bargaining with tourists, offering special hourly, daily, or weekly rates. Not so Dudley. He merely stood stiffly at attention beside his shining car, which had two doors open. He smiled and nodded at all the new arrivals who came within nodding range, but he refused, as always, to take any part in the mad scramble for fares. The mild-mannered man who elbowed his way through the crowd, clinging to an arm of a woman with reddish hair and blue eyes, spotted the gleaming cab. The man carried a leather attaché case. "You free?" he inquired, glancing quickly at Dudley.
"Yes, sir," Dudley said courteously. "Climb right in, sir. Where are your bags?"
He spoke with a distinct British accent. "Over on the rack," the man said. "Two large brown suitcases.
On each of them are the initials AA. Dudley reached out a hand for the attaché case, but the man shook his head. This I carry with me, always. Remember that. Dudley got the bags and deposited them in the trunk of the cab. He closed the curbside doors, climbed behind the driver's seat, pressed the foot starter, and the engine purred smoothly.
The Myrtle Bank Hotel, sir?
Dudley asked, glancing over his right shoulder. Virtually all tourists checked in at the Myrtle Bank Hotel in Kingston to freshen up and arrange itineraries.
It's hot as hell, the woman said irritably. Get moving.
Dudley started driving as the man replied,
Just tour around Kingston for a while until we make up our minds. We neglected to make reservations. Do you suppose there are any vacancies in good mountain lodges about 3,000 feet up, above the heat and mosquito level?
Dudley nodded.
I dare say, sir. This morning I brought down 4 departing guests from the Casa Caribe. It is about 4,000 feet up in the Blue Mountains. The accommodations are excellent, the food is very fine, and the view is beautiful. The temperature averages about 66 degrees. It is an ideal place for a man and a woman to get lost.
What do you mean, lost? The man sounded startled. Dudley gestured laconically with his left hand.
Lost from all this, sir. The crowds, the traffic, the police whistles and horns.
You speak very good English. Now the man sounded relieved. You must have attended school. Dudley nodded and his chest expanded.
Thank you, sir. My parents were Quashies, peasants. They had nothing. It is very unpleasant, having nothing.
So you decided to do something about it? The man asked.
Yes, sir. As a child, I used to drive out to the airport with a friendly cab driver. I did many odd jobs. When the University of the West Indies was founded in 1949, I became a charter member of night school classes.
Dudley chuckled.
I also became the charter janitor.
The woman, glancing out the cab window onto crowded Harbor Street, said icily,
Through these islands entered integration. I suppose you belong to the country club, too?
Dudley spoke quietly.
Hardly, mistress.
Don't call me mistress,
the woman said belligerently, holding out her right hand. A diamond sparkled.
We've been duly wed for 7 stupid years.
Easy, Linda, the man said. It's an island custom. Married women are known as mistresses.
She spoke harshly.
Damn the island customs. Damn the island, too. Now what do? Go and sit on top of a mountain and twiddle our thumbs for a couple of months?
Arthur Anders, observing the veins bulging in Dudley's neck, said softly but firmly,
Perhaps you'd prefer to be laundering at Leavenworth. I warn you again, Linda, be careful what you say. You are on British soil, and Jamaicans, for the most part, are highly loyal subjects. I am sure you possess enough intelligence to realize that, as my hostess and confidential secretary, you are involved as an accessory before and after.
Dudley cleared his throat.
Excuse me, sir. Mistress. We are now driving past the government buildings on Duke Street. Over yonder, where the coconut palms grow high, are the offices of the United States Consular Representative. Almost next door are the offices of the Cuban and Colombia Consular Representatives.
Interesting, Arthur Anders said.
He chuckled.
And tell me, where is the Khrushchev Club?
Jamaica, Dudley replied. Does not have consular headquarters for the Russians, so far as I know, sir.
Again Anders chuckled.
So you play cards with Fidel, but Nikita is merely a kibitzer? 'Twas ever thus.
I fear I do not understand.
What is your name? Anders asked.
Dudley, sir.
Dudley what?
Quashies rarely have second names, sir. It makes little difference. Sometimes they adopt the names of the owner of the banana or sugar cane plantations where they work. In my case, my parents and I worked for Sir Edward Dudley.
I see, Anders hesitated. Dudley, you might be helpful to me. We expect to be here for 6 weeks. What would you charge to serve as our private chauffeur on a round-the-clock basis? £15 a week, sir, plus fuel and room and board in servants' quarters wherever you lodge.
I like to work in round figures, Anders replied. Without so many extra shillings for this and farthings for that, I'll pay you $50 American a week for 6 weeks. Is it a deal?
That will be quite satisfactory, sir.
The name is Anders. Arthur Anders.
Yes, sir. Mr. Anders. Now, would you and Mistress Anders like perhaps to visit the straw market, or enjoy tall planters' punches at one of the better pubs?
Linda spoke spitefully.
Take us out of this stinking town and up into the mountains, now.
Yes, mistress.
Dudley spoke quietly.
You will pardon me, please, but the town does not stink. Our island as a whole is a poor one. There is great poverty and much unemployment. But our people are clean and decent. Patient, too, I dare say.
Take us up to the Casa Carib, Dudley, Anders ordered. Mrs. Anders is tired and nervous. We had a bumpy flight. Dudley made a quick left turn onto a blacktop road. He drove rapidly but professionally through the city, resting an elbow on the horn button at every intersection. Twice Anders closed his eyes and clenched his fists as he waited for a crash. Then he came to realize that it was the driver with the loudest horn and the fastest pickup who managed to navigate successfully in Kingston. They passed through several small, squalid villages. The blacktop ended abruptly, and now they were climbing sharply up the mountain over a winding limestone road, so narrow that no two cars could pass except at intervals of about a mile where the trail would widen briefly. Now and then they would speed through dark tunnels, tropically and splendidly beautiful with the lush vegetation from alluvial pockets, and they could hear the wild, weird, rhythmic sounds of water cascading over towering cliffs.
Yonder,
Dudley said, pointing to a magnificent tree with decorative hanging clusters of capsular fruits,
is one of our aki trees. Very good fruit. Mashed with beef, pork, and onions, it makes very good soup.
How much further? The woman asked.
4, perhaps 5 miles, mistress. The Blue Mountains are very steep. We must wind around and up.
Half an hour later, they emerged into a level clearing where the air was cool and invigorating, and the view of Kingston and its busy harbor fairly breathtaking. Dudley braked the car to a halt at the steps of a structure that was architecturally British, yet which resembled a stateside split-level ranch house built into the side of a mountain. A tall, thin, agile man carrying an armful of late-blooming cassias stepped blithely down the steps from a wide veranda and greeted his new guests.
"Harry Chalmers at your service,"
he said cheerfully, opening a car door.
"Welcome aboard. Had my binoculars on you as you wound up the trail. Sorry Mrs. Chalmers is not with me. A bit under the weather, you know."
He helped Linda out of the car and presented her with the bouquet. She murmured her thanks. Then he shook hands firmly with Anders, who said,
"My wife Linda, Mr. Chalmers. I am Arthur Anders. I trust you have a vacancy?"
Chalmers nodded vigorously.
"Oh, yes, yes, indeed. Off-season, you know. 4 guests departed this morning. Only 2 other couples here. Honeymooners."
Chalmers chuckled.
"We see very little of them. We have a nice chalet overlooking the city, with twin beds, a tub, and facilities for preparing snacks. Dudley, take their luggage over to the Mango Chalet. The door is open. Mrs. Anders, Mr. Anders, follow me. I shall order a fresh pot of tea while you register."
"Dudley?" Anders said sharply. "The attaché case? I'll take it. It always stays with me, remember?"
"Yes, sir,"
Dudley said. Linda yawned.
"I don't like tea. I really think I need a drink and a shower. I'll go with Dudley."
Chalmers looked apologetic.
"Shower?"
he said.
"I regret we have never installed showers. What a pity. But I shall have Matilda, our house girl, draw you a warm tub immediately."
"You got a swimming pool?"
Linda asked irritably. Chalmers nodded.
"Yes, indeed, a charming pool, fed by mountain springs."
He smiled.
"A bit on the coolish side for you statesiders. About 60 degrees, but invigorating, most definitely.
I'll bet, Linda said, trailing after Dudley. Invigorating like an ice cube down your back.
Don't mind her, Anders said as Linda and Dudley vanished around a corner. Long flight. Bumped into some squalls, all that sort of business.
I understand,
Chalmers said pleasantly.
Understand perfectly, old man. Sudden changes of altitude, too, you know. Such things are sometimes temporarily bothersome to newcomers. Tomorrow she'll feel like a new woman. Here, over this way. Here is the registry book. The rate for the Mango Chalet, double occupancy, is £10 a day. This includes dinner at 7-ish each evening in the manor house. Most guests prepare their own breakfasts. You'll find the refrigerator adequately supplied. Then they tour the island, visiting our historic spots, and return for dinner.
Anders merely grunted. He was registering with care. At a New York hotel, he had made the dangerous mistake of signing correctly Mr. and Mrs. Andrew Anderson. I'll pay you 2 weeks in advance, Anders said crisply, laying 4 $100 bills on the desk. Chalmers studied his signature, counted the bills twice, and gave him $8 American in change.
Now for a spot of tea, Mr. Anders,
Chalmers suggested, rubbing his hands together briskly.
Or perhaps you might prefer scotch and soda?
Anders shook his head. Thanks, I'll take a rain check. Chalmers looked bewildered. I mean, Anders said, laughing, I'll accept the invitation after I have freshened up and discussed plans with my wife.
Most certainly, said Chalmers. Delighted to have you any time. By the way, Mango Chalet is so named because it rests beneath a large mango tree. If, during the night, you hear thumps on the roof, do not be alarmed. Occasionally, when breezes gust, mangoes drop.
Glad it's not a coconut tree, Anders said jovially. A bland-faced, uniformed Jamaican maid was leaving the chalet as Anders entered. She bowed her head.
The mistress is in the tub, sir, she said. Dudley has gone to the servants' quarters. On the table in the breakfast nook are 2 handbells. All you need to do for service is step out on the veranda, ring the small bell for me, the larger one for Dudley.
Thank you, Anders said, admiring her figure as she left. Inside the chalet, he heard Linda splashing in the tub and singing. The words were slightly slurred. Anders suspected she had company in the tub, a bottle. In recent years, her capacity for alcohol had numbed her boudoir bounteousness, not to mention her executive reliability. They were heading, Anders often thought, for the point of no return.
Linda, Anders called. Are you all right? It's Arthur.
He heard her giggle.
Isn't it a crying shame? I thought maybe it was Dudley. He does look like Belafonte, doesn't he?
I want to talk to you, Anders said.
Come on in. Bring Belafonte and Mr. Chalmers and Matilda. We'll have a hootenanny.
Angrily, Anders opened the bathroom door. The place was quaintly decorated, to put it mildly. Someone had converted an old rum vat into a tub. Linda was sitting in the tub, well lathered with suds and bourbon. A half-empty bottle rested precariously on the edge of the bathtub.
On top of Old Smoky, she sang, all covered with booze.
Damn it, Linda, are you going to start this nonsense again?
She looked at him with innocent blue eyes and blew an alcoholic bubble.
What else is there to do, darling, on top of Old Smoky? Twiddling our thumbs or pick pineapples or peel bananas? You tell me.
Look, he said, swallowing his anger. We've almost got it made. This is a nearly perfect hideout. About a month from now, after I'm sure we haven't been tailed, we'll fly to Caracas.
Caracas, she said, imitating him. Polly wanted Caracas, but Linda wants out, back to New York, where the lights are brighter and the martinis drier.
You'll like Caracas, he said quietly. Lots of life and laughter. And from what I gather, by the time we get there, the commies will be running the show in Venezuela. I'll be on top. We'll take vacations in Mexico City and Acapulco.
Have you gathered anything else? Like dough?
Linda demanded in a bitter voice.
I'm moving cautiously. Our money, $100,000, lies just 4,000 feet below us in the vault of the Bank of Nova Scotia. Within the next few days, I'll contact Senor Cabrera of the Cuban consulate. I'll turn the papers over to him. He'll present them to the Soviet agent. We'll get our money, and after a cooling-off period, we'll be on our way to South America. She pouted.
Linda doesn't like Jamaica. Linda doesn't want South America. Linda wants New York. And out.
You're in too damn deep to ever get out, he said savagely. She laughed and wagged a pink finger at him.
Arthur's been a naughty boy, she said. What would they say on Pennsylvania Avenue if Linda went back and told them how naughty?
Anders shrugged. It's as I've told you. If you like the idea of laundering at Leavenworth, go on back to the States. You're hooked good. Don't forget it. He walked out of the bathroom.
Don't stumble over any cliffs, darling,
he heard Linda call out, and simultaneously someone knocked softly on the front door. He opened it abruptly.
Pardon me, sir, Dudley said, handing him a fur neckpiece. The mistress left this in the car.
Thanks, Anders said ungraciously. He tossed the neckpiece on a chair. But as Dudley started to leave, he spoke again. Dudley, I understand there are some mountain trails for tourists around here. Would you show me where they start?
Gladly, sir. Just follow me.
They walked behind the chalet and through a forest of mango and ebony trees. They reached a narrow limestone trail which afforded a spectacular view of the British cantonment, Newcastle, high in the mountains. The trail snaked perilously close to a precipice, and a portion of it was sturdily fenced off with lignum vitae wood. Anders rested his arms on the fence.
So it's a little hard making ends meet in this country? He asked Dudley.
It is not simple, sir.
Here, Anders said, digging in a pocket. I'll pay you 3 weeks in advance. He handed Dudley 3 crisp $50 bills and thought he detected a gleam in the eyes of the Jamaican.
It is not necessary, sir. I trust you.
Good. I trust you, too. So take the money. Now, how'd you like to make another $500?
Very much, sir. My automobile is rapidly deteriorating.
Anders cleared his throat. All right. As I said, I trust you, and I think we understand each other. He gestured back toward the chalets. Mrs. Anders has become very difficult. Impossible, in fact. She is a confirmed inebriant. Anders withdrew a wallet from his jacket. He extracted 5 $100 bills. These trails are treacherous. I suspect that right now we are looking across a gorge that is at least 1,000 feet deep. Could there not be an accident? He handed the bills to Dudley. Dudley glanced over both shoulders. His face was impassive as he accepted and pocketed the bills.
Such things I do not do myself, sir. But this does not eliminate the possibility of hiring an, trustworthy assistant.
Anders smiled.
Good. One other thing. Are you acquainted with Senor Cabrera at the Cuban consulate?
Dudley nodded.
Many times I have been his chauffeur.
Again Anders smiled. This afternoon you will drive down to Kingston. I will write a note. In this note I will advise the senor that I wish to meet him in a secluded spot to deliver some important papers. Do you know of such a spot? Dudley nodded.
The Harbor House. There is a back entrance to private rooms.
Fine. Give me a report tomorrow.
Very good, sir,
Dudley said. He walked rapidly away and vanished in greenery. Almost, Anders thought, like an Indian. Anders expected, upon his return to the chalet, to find Linda passed out on a bed. Instead, the warm bath and relaxation apparently had a sobering effect.
Hi, she said nonchalantly. I feel like stepping out. I'd like to take a ride to the top of Old Smoky.
Go ahead, Anders said flatly. I want to bathe, shave, and sack out. Ring the big bell and Dudley will appear. She laughed.
You trust me alone with Belafonte?
I trust you alone with no one.
Diplomat, where is your charm?
It stumbled over a cliff, darling.
Too bad it left you behind.
She walked out the front door. 5 minutes later, as the old Chevrolet struggled up a steep incline, Dudley said to Linda,
The road does not entirely reach the peak of the mountain, mistress. It becomes too hazardous. The last half mile must be on foot.
That's all right,
Linda said. She was sitting on the front seat beside him.
You can stop right here, Dudley.
She smiled.
I beg your pardon, mistress.
I said stop here.
He complied.
How would you like to make $1,000, Dudley?
He shrugged.
Money is always useful.
She reached into a pocket of her shorts and withdrew 5 $100 bills. She handed them to Dudley.
Arthur, my husband, will ask you to drive him down to Kingston in a day or two. After a conference, he will expect to return here with his attaché case loaded with money. However, he won't return here. There will be, well, some sort of an accident. You will return with the attaché case and receive an additional $500. Agreed?
Such things, Dudley said, accepting the bills. I do not do myself, mistress, but I feel confident it can be arranged.
Good. Now take me back to the chalet. I need a drink.
Late that afternoon, Dudley drove alone down to Kingston. He parked in front of the Cuban consulate. Then he walked slowly and carefully, using several back alleys, to the United Kingdom Trade Commissioner's office in the Royal Mail Building. He entered by a back door and walked up a flight of stairs. In a private room, he filed a report with a middle-aged man who had guileless blue eyes set in a rare roast beef red cherubic face.
Describe the attaché case, Dudley,
the man ordered. Dudley did so. The man strolled over to a locker, extracted an attaché case, and showed it to Dudley.
Something like this one?
Almost identical, Mr. Bartlett.
Good.
Mr. Bartlett stuffed the case with newspapers and locked it. He smiled as he lit a cigar.
Late tonight, Dudley, Mr. Bartlett said. You will make a substitute. How is your problem? Then bring Anders' attaché case here. I will advise the United States consular representative, and we shall meet here about midnight. Thus far, Dudley, good show.
Thank you, sir.
People rarely locked their windows or doors in the chalets at Casa Caribe because the night breezes were soothing and the establishment had an excellent reputation. It was comparatively simple for barefooted Matilda to exchange attaché bags while Anders and his wife were sleeping that night. However, as she closed the door, it made a slight thump, and she heard Linda say in startled tones,
Arthur, Arthur, wake up! I heard something.
Anders muttered,
Go back to sleep. It's the mangoes. They fall on the roof.
At exactly midnight, British and United States government authorities opened and examined the contents of Anders' attaché case while Dudley stood by.
By Jove, Bartlett said at one point. Have a look at this. An authentic Pentagon report on the exact positions of all your Minutemen silos, latest developments on your Titan, Atlas, Hound Dog, and Sergeant missiles, the operational data of SAC, the positions of your ocean-bottom radar detectors, the most recent report on deployment and positions of Polaris-equipped submarines, the areas covered by your picket ships, and more. Gad!
It is highly disturbing,
the man from stateside said.
Good work, Dudley, Mr. Bartlett said. We'll take it from here, never fear.
Dudley fumbled in a pocket.
I have $1,000 for you, the money they gave me for destroying one another.
Mr. Bartlett smiled.
Put it in the bank. I have discussed that matter with Scotland Yard. We all agree you've earned it.
Thank you very much indeed, sir.
About 9 the next morning, Dudley reported to the Anders' chalet. Good morning, Dudley, Anders said. He appeared to be in excellent humor.
Mrs. Anders and I have decided to do a little island hopping, preferably off the beaten tourist tracks. Can do? I'll have the car ready in half a mo, sir, Dudley replied.
They drove for nearly an hour over wild and wonderful mountain trails and finally reached a weird, barren area, out of which rose fantastic pyramids and cones of limestone and thick forests.
"We are in Maroon country," Dudley explained quietly. "This is known as the cockpit country of Trelawney, near Acampong. It is said the Maroons were originally slaves who fled from their Spanish masters. They have their own government and tribal chief. They are rarely seen even by our natives."
"Are they dangerous?" Anders asked. Dudley smiled a little.
"It all depends. They seek peace. But the Maroons are most perceptive. They instinctively recognize evil and deal with it in accordance with their own laws."
He stopped the old car and opened the doors.
"Come," he said. "I will show you the oldest and largest cotton tree on the island. Few tourists have seen it."
They trailed him up a sharp incline through a forest of cassias, coconut palms, and cedars. Anders, who was puffing, glanced at his wristwatch. They had been walking for about 45 minutes. He looked at Linda. She, too, was breathing hard.
"Dudley," Anders said sharply, "I think we..."
He looked all around. Dudley had vanished.
"Meet Jane, you Tarzan," Linda said.
"Very unfunny," Anders said. "Sit down. I'm tired."
The following midnight, Dudley met again with the British and United States government men in the back room of the Royal Mail House. Mr. Bartlett spoke severely.
"Somehow Mr. and Mrs. Anders have escaped from the island," he said. "You should have contacted me immediately, Dudley."
Dudley smiled.
"They have not escaped. The Maroons have them."
Mr. Bartlett frowned.
"We shall have to go after them."
Dudley shook his head.
"I would not advise it, sir. The Kil Bakra is blooming near Acampong. It is said the Maroons have an epidemic among them."
"Good God, man," Mr. Bartlett said. "If yellow fever is rampant among the Maroons, we must send them medical aid."
Dudley shook his head.
"A doctor might not return, sir, nor would our medicines be used. The Maroons have their own medicine men, and betrayal, sir, deserves betrayal."
"Highly irregular," Mr. Bartlett said, coughing. "You should have advised me. What about their landlord, Mr. Chalmers?"
"I have advised Mr. Chalmers," Dudley said evenly, "that Mr. and Mrs. Anders were suddenly recalled stateside. I shall bring their baggage to your office, sir."
Mr. Bartlett arose. He addressed his friends.
"Insofar as I am concerned," he said, "this confidential matter is closed. I assume, of course, that a coded cablegram will be sent to the Pentagon. That will be all for now, Dudley."
Back in his old cab, Dudley sang a song as he drove up the mountain.
"Down the way where the lights are gay, and the sun shines daily on the mountain top."
After a night's rest and a day's relaxation, he would take Matilda to Montego Bay for a dancing date in the square. They might even attend the cinema. There was a stateside film showing which he had long wished to see. It was entitled Counter-Espionage.